And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, before I forget, because I almost forgot yesterday, I gotta tell you all this. So as we are syndicated now, we're on multiple stations across the northern part of the state. Crawford Media Group, which owns some of the stations that we're on, one of theirs is WXJC out of the Birmingham area. WXJC Radio, they've asked me to announce, is doing a Pastor Appreciation Month. Literally, what you can do is you can go to their website, WXJCradio.com, click on the Pastor Appreciation Month banner they've got on the website. Nominate your favorite pastor. Why? Well, first of all, it's a thankless job. It's one of those jobs that never seems to end. I've been in full-time ministry before. It's a never-ending deal sometimes. And then, by the way, they will pick one pastor a week and give them a $100 Visa gift card. So, yeah, I mean, you might want to rally a few of your friends and say, you know what, pastor, we'd put your name in. How many of you? Like 93 of us. And who knows, you might wind up getting your pastor a $100 Visa gift card. Wouldn't that be a cool thing? But I guarantee you, though, that what they'll do is they'll be more honored by the fact that you nominated them than even getting the $100 Visa gift card, although that won't hurt. WXJCradio.com. You can nominate your favorite pastor. I think that's a cool thing throughout the month of October. Keep doing it. Okay, so got some text coming in. Appreciate that. Thumbs up from Paul from Athens. Appreciate you. Paul, that was the one, by the way, I was trying to get to the last 2 days. Thank you, brother, for pushing me forward. I just got a text from Ron from Huntsville. Says, just caught the tail end of your discussion. I like your new word. This is what I found on Wikipedia. A kakistocracy is a government in which the worst people are in charge. This obscure word is used in political commentary, especially to call out a government considered corrupt or incompetent. Thank you, Ron. Thank you very much. Thank you. The least among us are apparently governing sometimes, and that's kakistocracy. Ron from Huntsville, new on the text line. Jenny from Decatur has been texting in. JT from Lacey Springs, Brian from Huntsville, James from Harvest. Yeah, we got a plethora of texters today. Well, I'm moving to number two. Number dos on the list of dippers. So here's the thing. I am mindful of the fact that the First Amendment certainly exists. I'm an attorney. I get it. The First Amendment certainly exists. There's a freedom of speech. There is certainly a right to public discourse. Now, there's limitations. You can't go into a crowded theater and yell fire. That's the old, you know, adage about there are limitations upon the freedom of speech. I get it. You can't try to defame someone. I get it. But generally speaking, in this country, we value the right for people to have their own opinions and be able to espouse those opinions. You know what's interesting to me, though, is there are aspects of the law that seem to fall on deaf ears right now in law schools. Law schools. Schools about law. The places where people go to learn how to be attorneys and future judges and even future law professors. I say this because story after story, I've got this whole section right now we're going to do called Legal Snowflakes, and I'll probably get to part of it when we get back from the break. I know all of it, really, when we get back from the break. Legal Snowflakes. What happens when you've got law schools that do not remind students that you can't be here in a law school learning about the First Amendment and the value of the Constitution and innocent until proven guilty and shout down people who are here to speak on your campus because you don't like their freedom of speech, you believe they're guilty until proven innocent, and you don't value the sanctity of the Constitution? You're in the institution that's supposed to be teaching you that. It's so bad that in one recent demonstration by a bunch of woke law school students at Yale, that one of the federal district court judges on the D.C. circuit said he no longer wants any, and by the way, he's a Democrat, he no longer wants any clerks to come from Yale, period, as long as that kind of behavior is going to go on. Well, so I'm going to go through this stuff, but I've got one of the first articles. The thing that sparked this is a National Review piece dated yesterday called The Emotional Meltdown in American Law Schools. It's a really good piece by Dan McLaughlin. We'll cover down on that when I get back. Legal Snowflakes. Yeah, the future attorneys, judges, and law professors. Oh, my gosh. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I'm talking about we are airing everywhere across North Alabama. I'm talking down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, before I go any further, let me just quickly remind you guys. I key in a lot of times when I hear things that are military related. This is part of my background, my family's background. I've got family members still on active duty. But and I know those of you like me that listen to the show have heard me talk about the water contamination at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It's real. It is real. Apparently, it went on for quite a while. Government knew it, didn't do anything about it. And there have been upwards of 19 different illnesses attributed to this contamination at Camp Lejeune. So to verify some of this, I called my friends at Riley and Jackson Law Firm. And I know these folks personally. I've worked with them. We've collaborated on some issues before. They're friends of mine. And I said, okay, guys, what's the deal? Camp Lejeune. And they said, listen, man, Phil, it's legit. If you were there from 1953 to 87, anywhere in that window, 53 to 87, you could have been a dependent. You could have been a trainee, someone there on TDY. You're a permanent duty station service member there. And you were there anywhere between 53 and 87, and you've got some illnesses, or for that matter, you're related to someone who did, you may want to call Riley and Jackson and find out whether you have a claim, because they're filing claims like daily right now. Here's the deal. Here's their number, 205-879-5000. Riley and Jackson, 205-879-5000. No charge for the call. They only charge you, by the way, if they get something done for you and receive payment on your claims, period. Riley and Jackson, 205-879-5000. Tell them you heard about it here on Right Side Radio. I got a caller on line one. Oh, is that Brian? Brian from Huntsville. Brian, how you doing today, man?
Doing okay. And I heard you talking about the Yale students not being, graduate students being accepted at a certain firm. And that's across the board in so many ways. I mean, I sent one of my daughters, paid for her college myself. She didn't take out student loans, to a liberal arts college, and I'm not saying the name, in Alabama, another one somewhere else, and both of them ended up getting indoctrinated more than they got educated.
Wow, yeah.
And so at that point, to any of your listeners, anything along those lines, and you, I just want to throw this question out there. What do we do?
Yeah.
And I'll leave it there, sir.
All right, man. Great day. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you, man. Yeah, it's true. You send them off to college, and you just pray that not only will life issues be something that they cling to, that you hopefully raised them in, but that at the same time they won't become, you know, indoctrinated at the expense of your tuition dollars. That's an amazing thing. Well, all right. So here's the first one. Here's a short piece, and then I'll get into one of the longer pieces that I've got. Story off the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe. Yes, listen, we resource this show. We go far and wide. The Boston Globe, dated back in September of 2018, so right at 4 years ago, Yale had to cancel some classes as law students protested Brett Kavanaugh's nomination. Remember all that? I mean, so the article here in Boston Globe talks about how a woman named Christine Blasey Ford is accusing Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her at a party when they were teenagers. Okay, sure, that happened 35 or 40 years ago. But it says that dozens of students dressed in black staged a sit-in at Yale Law School on Monday of that week, back in 2018, to protest the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court and demand an investigation into sexual misconduct allegations against him. Now, these are students, by the way. Now, first of all, do they have a First Amendment right? Certainly they do. And they're exercising that First Amendment right. They're exercising that First Amendment right to call for the rights of another individual to be infringed upon. They are calling for him to be considered innocent, or excuse me, guilty until proven innocent. They're law students. They're being taught that our system of jurisprudence and criminal law is just the opposite. We are literally in a country where you are innocent until proven guilty. And you cannot stop someone from getting a job. But nonetheless, he was going through an entirely burdensome and overly grueling process of being confirmed by the U.S. Senate after being nominated by the president. That is the way our laws work when it comes to Supreme Court nominations. But they couldn't have that. So they protested, and they demanded. They demanded that a constitutional officer not be confirmed by the Senate because surely he must be guilty until he's proven innocent. These are law students. So Yale faculty members had to either cancel or reschedule classes to accommodate the protests. These are the ones who are going to go on to become lawyers and judges and law professors. Great piece, though, and this is the one that kicked off this whole piece of my Triple Dipper. From the National Review, dated yesterday. That one sounds thicker, doesn't it? This one ain't a light read. This is a five-pager, man. It's got highlights. Lord, I wore out the highlighter on this one. The title of it is The Emotional Meltdown in American Law Schools. So he takes issue, the author does, Dan McLaughlin, takes issue with a guy named Mark Joseph Stern, who I just realized wrote the next article that I've got in my stack. Mark Joseph Stern of Slate, well, there you go, has written a report from the front lines on how American law school faculty members and students are handling the first year under an originalist Supreme Court. If you're not familiar with the term, an originalist is sometimes known as a strict constructionist, is someone who views the Constitution of the United States as immutable, somebody who believes that it is to be construed or as its original form. You don't get to interpret it and change it and say, well, we believe today what that really means is, or when you apply it to today's modern culture and the whims of society, what we think it should mean is, no, until Congress amends the Constitution, it is what it is. Bam, end of story. That's what an originalist is. Well, we now have more originalists on the court than we've ever had. It says, every American citizen who cares about our legal system should pay close attention, but not for the reasons that Stern wants. The picture that emerges from this, and much of the left legal journalism angst at the start of the 2022-23 Supreme Court term, is of a movement having an emotional meltdown because its intellectual framework leaves no room for an elite institution that they don't control and they can't intimidate. There you go. Starts off with Section 1, calls it snowflake professors. Here's some of the folks that are teaching these kids. As this guy Stern from Slate went out and polled various law professors, one of them was UCal Berkeley. Well, there you go. UCal Berkeley School of Law professor Kiara Bridges. She says when the Dobbs decision, the one that overturned Roe v. Wade, when the Dobbs decision came down, she got a migraine for the first time in a decade. The image of the court as a majestic guardian of liberty was a complete lie. And it wasn't about her own personal feelings. Now she had to teach her students about the work of an institution that made her sick to even contemplate. That's a law professor, by the way. I'm not sure she'd ever spent a day in court, but she's a professor teaching kids. Serena Mayeri, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Carey Law School, traces her recent disillusionment to another case called Trump v. Hawaii. It left me deeply shaken, she said. It was weeks before I could bring myself to read the opinions in full. A law professor couldn't read the opinions of the Supreme Court because they so distressed her. Tiffany Jeffers, a professor at Georgetown University Law Center, told me that this is the write-up here, told me that the flurry of hard right rulings this June caused many of their professors to have their own personal grieving periods. Here's the thing. The author of this article goes on to say, and I totally agree with this, he says his immediate response to this is that lawyers lose cases all the time, sometimes with catastrophic consequences. Indeed, most legal cases end with one side losing or both sides settling for less than what they wanted. It says that legal activists lose battles every year. And then the author of this article says, if your job is teaching the law to students, then part of that job is teaching them to think like a lawyer. And that includes learning how to handle temporary setbacks and permanent defeats. And professors who hit the fainting couches and can't even read opinions they disagree with are not good role models for those who are learning to practice law. Wow, he is laying it on thick, brother. Laying it on thick. But this is the problem we have, folks, is that these young skulls full of mush are literally coming up into the world where they're going to become the next activists. They're going to become activists from the bench. They're going to become activists from the courtroom. I took on a case yesterday, reviewed it for a client, and was shocked at the case that was filed by an attorney out of Birmingham. And when I went to his website, I realized he's nothing but an activist. Everything about his page was on activism, and the whole lawsuit was based on activism. And it was a crap case, not only based on the facts of his case, but on the fact that you could tell that he does this on a regular basis. He had cut and pasted the complaint together in such a way that he had the wrong names and he had former defendants from a previous case in the complaint that he filed in this case. But he's an activist. The article that I've got here in my hand goes on to say, thinking like a lawyer also means being able to look at every argument from both sides. And you know what? That's hard. I'll be honest. It's hard. Sometimes I have to make myself go read something from a source that I don't agree with on a general basis. But I know that if I'm going to come into this show and talk to you guys every single day, I'd better make sure that I can ground my opinions, but that I know the other side's opinions. When I go to court, the worst thing I can do is ask a witness on the stand a question that I don't already know the answer to. And I despise being blindsided. And I rarely am because I make myself sit down and think, what's he going to say? What are they going to say? What's their point? What are they going to try and get to? Why would they call this witness? What's that piece of evidence say in their behalf, not mine? And yet, they're being trained not to think like lawyers, these legal snowflakes. Now, not all of them. Let me make sure I clarify. There are an amazing amount of solid quality lawyers that come out of law schools every single day, pass the bar, and move into the world of practicing law that are just as conservative as you and I. And they are not legal snowflakes. But when you realize the extent to which this is a growing issue on campuses around the nation, you have to look at it and go, Lord, the system of jurisprudence might be in trouble if these are the ones that are coming out on more and more of a sense of entitlement. Well, the article goes on to say, these people are lacking in self-awareness. They complain that the court is now steering itself into controversial debates of the day as if the courts are not supposed to get controversial. They say things like, professors are now faced with a quandary. How and why should you teach law to the students when the Supreme Court openly changes the meaning of the Constitution? But the entire point, though, of being an originalist is the Constitution does not change. It's immutable. Until Congress acts upon it, it does not change. And when you teach your students that the other side of the argument, he says, are villains, you're not going to be able to get them to understand the other side's arguments because you've vilified them to the nth degree. Listen, the bottom line, I got a little more on this. I got some examples of where this has happened. But this article was so good. And he points out here that there's three problems. First is the legal left does not actually have an alternative theory of how to interpret the Constitution. They don't know what to do. If it's not originalist, what is it? Well, it's everything. It's everything you want it to be. It's everything. The second problem, he says, is progressives are so used to controlling the elite institutions of our nation that they don't know what to do when conservatives grab the reins. It just baffles them. And thirdly, these legal snowflakes, they have basically the emotions are the currency of power in progressive institutions. And so they have to get emotional. They have to have their meltdowns. That's how they survive. That's how they work. That's how they operate. But emotions cannot run the realm in a courtroom. We get back. I got a few more details on this. It's pretty amazing. Some of the things that are happening in some of these elite law schools that indicate that these students are not being taught the law. They're being taught how to oppose the actual law at least as long as it suits their needs. Boomer, take me to a break, brother. I ran about a minute long. We'll come back from that, wrap it up. Hey, by the way, top of the hour, the Grand Council with my brethren, Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson. Love doing that every week. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. I'm still in legal snowflakes right now. I got a caller on the line, Boomer. Yeah, let me grab that real quick. Line two, Marty from Hartsel. Marty, how you doing, man?
I am wonderful. How are you today?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. What's on your mind?
Well, first off, I'd like to say I love your old music. It's all the classic rock that I grew up on.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No, I mean, you've been through a lot of different life experiences, and you're a practicing attorney.
Right.
Did you ever, I mean, in law school, did you ever have one of those activist professors that tried to coach you or lead you one direction? Or, I mean, did you experience that?
I personally did not, and I'll be honest with you. I went to school, law school, late in life. I'm late in my 50s now. I was in my 30s when I went to law school, so... I already.
That's why our music.
There you go. The reality is I didn't face that myself. And if they had, it wouldn't have gone over real well with me. But I know they see it, and in fact, where they really see it is when you have tenured professors at these elite institutions, and they become pretty full of themselves, and they sort of forget their place, and. So, but no, me personally, I did not face that. Now, I've met some liberal lawyers and I've met some liberal professors, but never what I would call a snowflake.
Okay. All right. I'm just curious.
All right, man. Hey, thanks.
I'm kind of curious about what your reaction would be to them.
Yeah, my reaction, you can imagine. But all right, Marty, thanks for the call, man. Got to move forward. Hey, got some great texts here, one of which was from Jenny from Decatur. Love this. Jenny said, three of my five children are Auburn grads. The youngest of these would not be swayed by one of her professors and always stood strong in her faith. At the end of her time in his class, he called her to the front of the class after he had dismissed the rest of the class for the day. He told her that although he did not agree with her, because he was an atheist, that he greatly admired her for standing strong in her beliefs. And this was a proud parent moment, she said, for my husband and I. What? Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Well, Jenny, you know, raise up a child the way they should go, and when they get old, they will not depart from it. So thanks for you and your husband raising your daughter well. Other great texts and quotes in here in the string. Let me just tell you, though, when I talk about legal snowflakes, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Some of it just makes you sad for the idea that these people are going to have to step out into the world one day and hopefully leave mommy and daddy's basement and leave their, you know, their tuition dollars behind. Here's one for you. Washington Examiner, dated February of this year. Georgetown law students demand a space to cry. I kid you not. Georgetown, elite school. A group of students at Georgetown University Law Center demanded a space to cry and have catered food while staging a sit-in protest to promote the firing of an embattled professor, Ilya Shapiro, who they disagreed with her commentary. And the dean of the law school accommodated. He said, I don't know what it would look like, but if they want to cry, if they need to break down, where can they go? I mean, because at a point where students are coming out of class to go to the bathroom to cry, well, the dean says, if you need a place, you call me. We'll find you a space. You shouldn't have to walk out of your class meetings in tears. I kid, Boomer, I'm kidding you. I'm not kidding you, man.
Would they create the boohoo basement?
The boo. You just coined that yourself?
I did.
I like it. We got stories here that I probably won't even get to now, like the Yale protest, where they shouted down a visiting speaker for daring to be a conservative. And this particular situation got so out of hand that Judge Lawrence Silberman on the federal district court in D.C., I believe, sent out an email to all other federal courts saying that all federal judges, and federal judges are presumably committed to free speech, should carefully consider whether any of these students so identified should be disqualified for potential clerkships, because they obviously don't understand the law. Then you had Harvard Law. October 4th, that's yesterday. Oh, 75 Harvard Law students walked out of a panel discussion in protest of its anti-abortion stance. Well, you know, they didn't go to the panel for any other reason except to be seen walking out. That's what they did. This is a disruptive protest because they did not appreciate the fact that an alternative position was on the campus. How about the Berkeley Law students who adopted a no Zionist speaker rule because they don't agree with Israel and they want boycott, divest, and sanction statements to be made known to the nation of Israel. And so they don't want any Zionist speakers. And it goes on from there. Legal snowflakes. Wow. Might want to vet your attorney before you hire them if they come out of one of these. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming up next, the Grand Council. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.